This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, who on a weekly basis fields questions. The questions can be sent to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We've got some great questions this week, and let's start with a question from...
from Robert. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Hope all is well. Wondering if you've come across any products that help with erectile dysfunction. There are many products advertised on TV, online. Do any of these work, or are they scams? Even Dr. Oz is endorsing a product on his TV program.
Let me break in there. I'm not even sure he is endorsing a product on his on his TV program, because he has stolen endorsements. There are sometimes people who, and what he has said is he's hired a legal team to try and root these out. Good. But it's kind of like whack-a-mole, because his name sells. Yeah. His name really immediately galvanizes product shipments.
As recommended by Dr. Oz.
And anybody sometimes, they'll just use his image or his visage, and it'll be a phony endorsement or something taken out of context.
Yeah.
But, I haven't watched the show. I don't know that lately he's recommended any such products. I kind of doubt it, actually, because I think while he can be a little reckless and has been in the past, I think he's more circumspect now that he's come under fire for, miracle cures and for being a little bit too facile about recommending, especially weight loss products.
Oh, yeah. All of that. I remember all. Yeah. So Robert says, Cialis, Viagra, etc., don't work for me. Is there any new research that suggests a surefire treatment for this problem?
A surefire treatment? Wow.
Remember all the spam email was all about Viagra, Viagra, Viagra? And that's all like slowed down, or maybe...
Well, they got a lot of better spam filters.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. The whole idea of a surefire cure for male impotence... that ain't happening, okay? Because it's a process that's complex. This email, indicates that even the products that are pretty strong are not the answer for this person's problem. Mm-hmm. There's a physical component to this. There's certainly a psychological component
to
this. I recently heard a very interesting, it was a VCast from one of my favorite guests on our podcast, Dr. Gio Espinosa. And he's a naturopath who does a lot of work in the field of male urological health. And he said something which really grabbed me, really formulated it very nicely. He said that the number one drug that can make it impossible to have an erection, what is it? What is the number one drug that makes it absolutely impossible to have an erection?
Whiskey.
No, because
smoking.
That can go either way. And smoke, I'd like a buck for every smoker who does fine in that regard. It's a risk factor. A drug that, it's a trick question, because it's actually a natural compound that the body makes. It's adrenaline.
Oh.
And adrenaline will stop any erection cold.
Fight or flight?
Fight or flight, because... Yeah. And by the way, there's a natural evolutionary reason for that, because if you're trying to escape a wild animal or some neighboring tribesman who's got, a bigger club than you, then an erection is
not something you need
superfluous,
right now.
Right? You need all that blood to go to your legs to propel you as fast as possible and, to escape or to stand and fight where... that is not really a useful weapon right. to have. So it is...
That's not the club you want right now.
Exactly. It's impossible to talk about this without inadvertently punning.
Right, but, and giggling.
So clearly, this is a big component. And failure begets failure, and that begets performance anxiety, and it's a big problem.
Oh, no,
so
is that going to happen again?
Really strong psychological roots. Now, what propagates that is the proliferation of these products out there that... don't work. They plainly don't work. They're, you know, if you know, some of the products are laced with Cialis inadvertently, or, you know, Viagra, especially some of the products that come to us from China that are misbranded or mislabeled.
Yeah.
They also may contain other stimulants that make you feel like you're getting a buzz, so that you feel like something's happening when you take these products, but that isn't necessarily going to give you an erection. And I cringe when I hear these products advertised on the radio. Are promoted. I think that there's some subtle evidence that certain things have a little bit of a helpful effect. But once you've blown through Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, those, it's like, you know, that's like comparing a slingshot to a shotgun. The medications are more powerful and more reliable. This person needs a complete, you know, physical workup by a urologist who specializes in male performance issues, erectile dysfunction. There are such. And, you know, they can perform that workup. There are, you know, we're looking for things that help. You know, there are injections that really do reliably give you an erection, but it's a little bit cumbersome because you actually have to put a needle into the side of the penis, and that's, you know, kind of icky for some. It works. It will produce an erection. You can have intercourse. It's not the same thing as a spontaneous erection in terms of the experience. There is also, you know, ultimately the various types of prosthetics, you know, like that, you know, provide you with hydraulic erection. There's an operation that inserts these things. They're, you know, penile implants. They were being pioneered when I was in my early medical training, and they've come a long way. And actually, they're pretty as yucky as it sounds, you know, on outwardly, they can work, and the technology is pretty amazing. So this is sort of a, you know, it's not as facile as, like, you know, listen to a radio ad and you know, get a product drop shipped to you that's got some kind of, you know, hot,
I mean, if the
hot
drugs
sounding
aren't working,
name.
I can't imagine a supplement.
Right.
Or
yeah.
On that note, Robert, we don't know how old Robert is, if he's on any medication.
Well, there's medication. Might, he could have diabetes. Old. He could have, you know, circulatory problems.
Low testosterone.
He could have low testosterone, which could be. And by the way, testosterone's not 100% either. Testosterone more works on libido more than on erection. Because the two things are linked, but they're not equivalent.
Right.
So you could take boxcar loads of. Yeah. I mean, we have.
It could be an indicator of coronary artery disease too.
I've seen 20-year-olds with testosterone that is soaring, who absolutely can't perform sexually.
Oh, wow.
And you know, part of it is there may be some sort of hydraulic problem, or there may be, you know, an extreme stress problem or mood problem.
Fascinating, Robert. Go check in with a urologist, number one. With a specialty in this. Best of luck to you.
Yep.
All right.
All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we like to give our sponsors an opportunity to share a message with you. So here it goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make these podcasts possible. All right, let's get back to questions. What's
okay,
next,
Layla? Okay, we've got an email from Matt. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been trying to study some of the literature of IV vitamin C in cancer. And I understand Linus Pauling and some other doctors treated a large group of terminal cancer patients and reported a 4-time increase in life expectancy in those treated with vitamin C. There were also other studies around the late 70s which showed no improvement.
Right.
So were they taking oral vitamin C or IV vitamin C?
Well,
what
I think the difference? Some of the work by Linus Pauling was involving oral vitamin C, which
he
himself
took as much as, I think, 10,000.
And he ultimately died of cancer.
Yeah.
But at an advanced age. He was like 90-something.
Right.
So, you know, that doesn't disprove it. I think Ewan Cameron, who was associate, also did some intravenous vitamin C work mm-hmm. with cancer patients. So then, in the face of this, a real skeptic named Dr. Charles Martel did some research on this that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine and that was hoped to completely repudiate the theory that vitamin C could be beneficial in cancer because it didn't work in his study. But Martel's study was extremely flawed because he took patients who were really end-stage cancer patients. They had they had stage 4 cancer that was metastatic and that was refractory to any conventional treatments. So these were cancer patients with the most resistant type of cancer, plus their immune systems were probably depleted by their pre-existing radiation and chemotherapy. And so he gave them oral vitamin C, and not much, I think like up to 10 grams of oral vitamin C, and they all died. And there was no difference between the control group and the group that took the vitamin C. Hence, therefore, vitamin C useless against cancer. But the study was extremely flawed. They stacked the deck. Parenthetically, Charles Martel, within a few years, himself was dead of cancer, ironically. But, you know,
He didn't take
the vitamin C. But, you know, it wouldn't have helped. It wouldn't have helped at that. You know, some oral vitamin C wouldn't have been, you know. So lately, the research has been rekindled. Mm-hmm. You know, a good colleague of mine, I've known her personally and professionally for years. Really a researcher with great integrity.
Can I guess? Jeannie Drisco?
Jeannie Drisco, our good colleague at Kansas University Medical Center, and she's been a guest on the radio show, and we try to get the word out about her research, has been using intravenous vitamin C. But, oh, by the way, you know, most holistic doctors, myself included, have used intravenous vitamin C for cancer for years, for decades. But she's the one who actually revived the research, and research is actually, it's not, shall we say, alternative research. It's research in a mainstream university hospital setting where she is treating patients adjunctively with vitamin C. It's not like she's saying, stop all conventional treatment and use the vitamin C instead. Many of these patients are getting chemotherapy for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, other cancers, and they're getting simultaneously intravenous vitamin C at high doses, 50,000, 75,000, up to 100,000 milligrams intravenously, which is much, much stronger than anything you can get orally. So the research is underway. It's promising. It looks like it helps a little bit. And that's the story.
That's the story. Okay. Matt, we hope that answers your question. Thank you for your email. Okay, let's see here. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, this is about low-dose naltrexone.
Yeah.
My doctor prescribed LDN for Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I'm 61. This is from Cecily.
So why would the doctor prescribe something like this for this condition?
It's
an autoimmune condition. Mm-hmm. So there is evidence, preliminary evidence and anecdotal evidence that a low dose of a conventional medicine called naltrexone, and by the way, naltrexone is what emergency responders now carry when they find someone who's overdosed. Mm. And so you get an injection of this, immediately reverses your opiate intoxication. and it can save lives.
Yeah.
So why would anybody want to take something that junkies get when they're ODing,
right, you know,
for autoimmunity? Well, it turns out that a much lower dose of that medication, probably, you know, the I think it's 150 for you know, someone who's an addict, and it's about anywhere from 2 to 5 for a person with autoimmunity. It turns out that if you take it at bedtime, it sort of suppresses your endogenous opiate production.
Yes. And so the body boosts its own endorphin.
The body will, when it wears off, the body will, it'll upregulate. It's sort of like, you know, when you stop taking certain drugs, there's a rebound effect. Well, there's a very, it's a very short duration of action. Mm-hmm. It will create some opiate receptor blockade. And then the body, in response, upregulates its own endogenous opiates. And those have a salutary effect.
Yeah.
In many conditions, we might see a benefit in fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. There have been some studies, certainly in Crohn's disease, there's been a study. So we think it might be useful for autoimmunity.
Anyway. So Cecily says, I started at 2.25 milligrams nightly. After 10 days, I increased it to 5 milligrams.
Right. That's a little high.
But I experienced numerous side effects, including nausea, dizziness. And it was like my taste buds changed. No longer enjoy foods the way I liked at this higher dose. So I cut back to 2.25 milligrams. The symptoms stayed with me. I finally stopped altogether, but the taste bud issue remains.
Yes, I don't know what's going on there because it
Her
could be coincidental. I do see some unusual reactions about 5% of the time with low-dose naltrexone, and people are uncomfortable, but usually it resolves when people go to a lower dose. The idea is we generally ramp up slowly so people get used to it. The most common reaction is sometimes sleep disturbance, but people get used to it. And it could also be nightmares. I had one patient who had taken it, well, like it's happened a couple of times. It's not uncommon to have very vivid dreams. And in people who are prone to nightmares, that could be an issue.
Right. So, Cecily says, my doctor says she's not seen side effects like this, nor can I find anything else. Interesting. I wonder if something else changed at the same time, but we're speculating here.
I mean, this is a phenomenon that is pretty common that you can get something, you do something new, and something happens.
Yeah.
So correlation is not necessarily causation.
Right.
It may be a coinkydink, but I'm always open to the possibility that it's a side effect. You know, side effects, as I've said before, break down into two categories. The side effects that are predictable. So, for example, with low-dose naltrexone, if somebody says, I don't sleep as well, oh, well, that's known.
Yeah.
Or like somebody says, I got an itchy scalp. Well, that's not known, but I'm not going to dismiss it because it may be your idiosyncratic response. So let's stop the medication or let's cut back and let's see if that goes away. And, you know, you could say, oh, you know, that gave me perpetual itchy scalp. But, you know, it's also, if you take away the thing that's supposed to incite the problem, it should go away.
Yes.
And this happens to us all the time when people start taking vitamins, right?
Oh, well, this happened, or I got sleepy, or I felt a strange sensation on the side of my head.
So what do we say then? What do we
stop? Stop taking everything.
Right.
And let's see if that symptom subsides. And
then add them back one by one.
And then add them back one by one, generally one every 2 to 3 days, because it takes 2 to 3 days for your body to react to anything. So then we would be able to learn if they were reacting to something,
a
particular supplement or some other binder or filler that was in that particular supplement. That could be the culprit.
One thing I never do, I never say, that's crazy, that's impossible. Because
I believe the patient.
You learn in this field that there are some very weird reactions. There are also what are called paradoxical reactions. Like I took theanine and it made me nervous.
Yes.
And I got hyper.
Right.
Well, no, it's supposed to relax you.
Yes.
But, is the person imagining it, or is there are backwards reactors in the world?
Yeah.
There are people who take a Valium and they feel like hyper.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like their dopamine receptors were ready and waiting.
It's almost like they're wired differently. Yes. You know, than, yes. So it's the paradoxical reaction sometimes that can occur.
Right, right. So, Cecily, we hope you feel better soon. You may require a workup on the taste bud issue.
Yeah, and so there used to be a place that I would send people to. I don't know if they're doing patient visits. They do a lot of research. It's called the Monell Center for Taste and Smell Disorders.
Wow.
And it's at University of Pennsylvania, and I think it's in Philly.
Wow.
So M-O-N-E-L-L. But, you know, an ENT might be a first stop, you know, to see what's going on.
When we lose our ability to smell and taste, sometimes I like to supplement with zinc.
Yeah, that's
to see if it may be helpful.
Zinc, and also some studies have shown that alpha lipoic acid can be helpful since it's a neuropathy, and that helps that. Or some studies have said phosphatidylcholine may be beneficial for that. Sometimes smell and taste disorders, they're relatively common.
All right, Cecily, best of luck to you. Okay.
Is there such a thing as a quick question in our pile?
No, this is a long one, because there's an article attached.
There's no yes or no answers?
There's no yes or no answer to this.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I think we should save this for next week.
Okay. Well, give us a preview. Can you give us a tease? I mean, just give us a tease, and we'll answer it next week.
I've heard about a drug addict's need for more and more. Does the same thing happen with supplements?
Wow. Okay, interesting. Well, that would come under the – I'm not going to answer the question, but it would come under the realm of what's called tachyphylaxis. Okay, so tachyphylaxis, fancy word. See, that's
tachyphylaxis.
Those years in medical school, they all that tuition money, it's paid off because I can use these big fancy words. They roll off my tongue, and this is like 35 years later, right?
You know, tachyphylaxis.
Tachyphylaxis.
Save
so what it means is it basically means you need higher doses of something for it to work.
Mm.
It's a known phenomenon in drugs that sometimes people develop tachyphylaxis. But not all drugs. Different drugs and different people.
Yeah.
Let's save this question for next week.
Yes.
Ooh, great. Good question.
All right. So stay tuned, Charlie, and all the rest of you.
Indeed. Thanks very much for joining us. And please continue to support our sponsors. Also, meet your supplement needs. Check out drhoffman.com, click on the store, and in that drop-down menu, you'll be invited to join FullScript, which is our supplement, online supplement dispensary. And they've got a wide assortment of supplements there. It's a great way to shop for supplements and also to support our Intelligent Medicine podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.